This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Wednesday means Leah Hextall. She had a break last week. Dan Rosen filled in admirably, but it's very nice to have Leah back. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Hanging in.
Well, that's good. You're doing better than a few of the NHL teams out there, I think.
Oh, my God. Some of these teams are just an absolute mess. And, you know, while we have you, because you're out there in Winnipeg, and we've got a little bit of news, a lot of rumblings that the Jets are going to officially part ways with Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, what are you hearing right now as we get a little deeper into the season here that they probably are not going to have him back?
Yes, you know, it looks like now it is going to be a mutual contract termination, which means that, one, the Jets will receive the relief in the cap hit, which is over $7 million for this year. So that gives them a little bit of room to possibly play with if they so decide to, coming up towards the trade deadline. And second of all, it also finishes the grievance process. So that will terminate as well, the grievance that was coming against the NHLPA because he was suspended. And they were speaking to the fact that they felt that the surgery for his ankle was a hockey injury, so that he should have been paid throughout his suspension. So that will end as well. So that's what happens when it comes to the finances of it. You know, and it's interesting, though, Don, because at this point, you kind of feel like, well, what's the point? You know, there's been a lot of talk around here about what will Byfuglien's legacy now be in Winnipeg. This was one of the most beloved players in this franchise's history. And, you know, now look what he's done. I mean, a lot of fans here, and I would have to think from what I'm hearing from the organization, there's a great deal of disappointment because he really handcuffed them this season with not figuring out what he wanted to do when it came to his playing days, whether or not he wanted to retire. And the club was very supportive, as I spoke to, you know, when he came to camp and said he wasn't sure if he wanted to play. They gave him that space to go make the decision, but then it turned into something more. He went and had surgery without talking to them. He did it on his own terms. The grievance is filed, yada, yada, yada. And now here they are, free-falling in the standings because their defense, as we all know, is anemic, and he was a major part of that. They were unable to do certain things in the offseason, like keep some of their defensemen that skated away in free agency. And now, even though we have the trade deadline coming up, where, yes, there is a little bit of cash to play with if they can get this termination done in the next couple weeks, but does this really mean anything at this point of the season? So I think there's a lot of disappointment, not only by the fans here in Dustin Byfuglien, but also at this point, the organization, and I would suggest likely some of his teammates as well.
Yeah, it's really a shame for sure, because he was a great player for them and they desperately needed him. It just didn't work out. And, you know, another loss, they fall at home to the Nashville Predators. So it's starting to sink in now that even though they're still mathematically very much alive for a playoff spot, that it just doesn't seem to be happening. You know, looking at that game last night, wasn't that long ago we were talking about Nashville and Winnipeg being the two best teams in the Western Conference, and what a shame that they got to play in the second round of the playoffs. This should be the conference final, and, you know, that both teams just looking close to maybe not making the playoffs. Nashville does have the games in hand, but, you know, how far those two teams have fallen in just basically a year.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, to me, this really talks about what's important in the NHL. And I mean, yes, the goal scorers they're going to get paid. We've seen it. And that was what Winnipeg decided to do. They decided to lock up their players up front in Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine. And that's why they lost players on their back end through the offseason, because they just couldn't afford to do everything. And that's what happens to a lot of teams. We're also seeing in Toronto, who's suffering right now as well and has a different situation there because of their goaltender, their starter being injured in Frederik Andersen. And it's interesting to me, though, is, are we going to see that there's going to be more emphasis put on the back end and defensemen? You know, you need defense to win. It, to me, is just as important as goal scoring. You know, if you have a goal, you have a chance, but you also need a very strong defense. And
yeah,
I think that perhaps, you know, some teams have let that slide because it's become a goal scorer's game because of the talent, the elite speed. And I understand that you got to score to win, but you also have to defend. And, you know, we see that even with Peter Laviolette being fired in Nashville and John Hines coming in, they're going back to that more defensive style that, you know, really was their structure. They had one of the best blue lines for so long, not only offensively, but also defensively. And you're seeing them, you know, when I saw them play last night, you can see them getting back to that hard, heavy form of defensive brand hockey. Whether or not it's too little too late for them this year in changing that style, I don't know. But the Jets have really suffered this year by not paying attention to their blue line.
Before we dive into the games last night, let's look a little closer at the Toronto Maple Leaf situation. They've lost their goaltender, Anderson, now. He's listed as day-to-day because of a neck injury. He will not play tonight against the New York Rangers, a team that was desperate for goaltending to begin with. We'll see how serious this injury is. And we're getting closer to the deadline. It's about less than 3 weeks away here. So what's the latest with Toronto? And could they be playing a team tonight that can actually give them some help?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about the New York Rangers situation and having those two great backups. And, you know, the fact is here's the thing. What we're hearing in Toronto is that Kyle Dubas, you know, he doesn't want necessarily to pay a high price for a backup goaltender. Because truly, if you look at the analytics, you don't need a backup goaltender to be great. You need them to be good. You need them just to come in and make some saves when they need to. What you really need is that defensive core. And I truly feel that, you know, Gorgiev and Shesterkin, the Rangers are going to want, you know, they're going to want something back for these young prospects that seem to have promise. And that's where, you know, I would temper Rangers fans here, because I understand they've played well, but they have no resume behind them. They haven't proven that they're a starter. They haven't even proven that they're a legitimate backup yet, because they haven't had the time to build that resume. And I don't think Toronto's going to be looking to pay a premium, which the Rangers would want for one of those goaltenders in the future. I think instead you're going to see Toronto go out to some team like Ottawa, looking at a Craig Anderson perhaps to make a trade for. He's 34 years of age, he's a proven backup, and he's an unrestricted free agent after this year. So giving them a couple draft picks to Ottawa, I think they'd take that deal. I don't think that Toronto wants to pay the price that they're going to have to for a legitimate backup that could turn into a starter down the road, which one of these Rangers goaltenders could be. So I don't think that deal's going to happen, quite frankly. I think Toronto's not going to necessarily focus on the backup position. I think they're going to focus on bringing in a defenseman, and that's where I think they're at right now.
Yeah, so they got some time here, and I'll be able to see them live and find out what the Leafs are going to do, kind of bouncing between third place in the Atlantic Division and out of the playoffs. It just seems to kind of go day to day there, so we'll see if they can even make the playoffs and what they need to do. Focused on some of the games last night, there was a ton of them, but there was one that kind of jumped out to both of us, and that was Colorado's win over Buffalo 6-1. Not so much that the Avalanche won the game, they're the better team, but things are just completely falling apart there with the Sabres. And I wanted to get your thoughts on what Sam Reinhart said after the game. And here's the quote. He says, "I think it's all coming down to the players at this point. I think that the system and the game plans that are set out for us give us an opportunity to have success. I think it goes back to what we're trying to preach here. Guys need to demand more out of themselves, and a lot of guys need to step the blank up." So it's easy for us on the outside to say, "Oh, just that poorly coached." But here's Sam Reinhart, a leader on that team, is looking within the room itself as the reason the Sabre team is completely falling apart.
I think that's exactly the case, and I really have to give credit. I like that Sam Reinhart came out and called out his teammates. You know, we've seen the Buffalo Sabres from their ownership group and Terry and Kim Pegula, who went on record saying that they are unhappy with what they're seeing with their franchise right now. But we've seen them spend money. We've seen them bring in different general managers, different coaches. You have Jason Botterill there right now as the GM. You have Ralph Kruger, who they brought in. He's a great orator. He does very well in communicating, especially with young players. At the beginning of the season, after all the players met with him, they spoke so highly of him. They felt so comfortable with him. I think he's there coaching. I think he is there doing what he needs to do. I do think it's within that room. You know, and the problem here, though, Don, is, you know, you have Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel. These are not old players in the league, but they've never been in the proper culture. And, you know, how much is that affecting them mentally? And is that affecting the entire room? And can they dig out of this? I mean, we're looking at 8 seasons, no playoffs for the Buffalo Sabres. The last playoff round win was back in 2007. We're in 2020. Right. I mean, it's not just the room, the fan base there. Some of the greatest fans in the game are in Buffalo. They always have the highest TV ratings for the Winter Classic, even though they don't even have a team in it, because they love their hockey there. And I just look at this, and there's just something institutionally wrong. But I agree with Sam Reinhart's, you know, remarks. At the end of the day, it's the players on the ice. It is their talent and their responsibility to play the game the right way. So if you have a player coming out, especially one of the leaders of the group, and you heard Jack Eichel say the other day, the wheels are not going to fall off here. Last night's game would indicate that that's happening again.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what needs to be done there, but quite frankly, it might be time to let go of one of these young superstars and bring in some more veteran players that still have some gas in the tank. And I know nobody wants to hear that in Buffalo, but there's something institutionally wrong to the point where I was listening to the 31 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick the other day, and there's some talk now about, is that franchise going to stay in Buffalo? And that is scary, because this is a franchise that has been supported, but the fan base is just at the end of their rope. And quite frankly, I don't know what it is, so I think I'm going to agree with Sam Reinhart and say, this is now on the players. They've got to not give up every single night and get out there and figure this out themselves, because it's been too long for this to keep going on, because it's year after year, and they spend the money, they bring in coaches, they bring in general managers, they do their due diligence on what they're supposed to do, and it just seems like there's no fix there.
All right, the big five in the Pacific, most of them losers last night, right? Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas, you know, all lost last night. Arizona did get the win because they shut out Edmonton. So now Calgary is the team with the last wild card spot, the only team that's a minus goal differential that could make the playoffs if its season ended today, a minus 19. That's a bit disturbing. And there sits Nashville and Chicago, Leah, that both are just 3 points out of a playoff spot. Nashville, 2 games in hand on Calgary. Chicago, just a game in hand on Calgary. You got to start to worry about a team like Calgary, where they've lost a couple of games in a row here. Is that a team of the five that are battling in that Pacific that you'd be the most concerned about?
I'm concerned about Calgary now, right now, in a big way, because especially what happened to their captain, Mark Giordano, last night. He suffered a lower body injury, which did not look good. His knee escaped him, and he did not look happy leaving the ice. We haven't had an update on him as of I can see yet, but that's a major part. We're talking about a Norris Trophy winner on their blue line, their captain, their leader. And last time he, you know, got an injury that missed half the season, they trailed off. So he's a big part of that team. So, you know, Calgary, it's interesting because up here, there's been so much talk about them lately because the Battle of Alberta with Edmonton, they've had some sensational games over the last few weeks, including a goalie brawl the other night on Saturday, which is just epic. So a lot of people here haven't seemed to be too worried about them, but with the Giordano possible injury last night, you know, this is a team that should be contending. They shouldn't be fighting for a wild card. In my opinion, they should be at the top of the Pacific where they were a year ago. And you have to wonder what's going on there, because they have everything they need in order to be a better team and sitting higher up than in the standings.
Yeah, it's just, and they lose last night to San Jose. And congratulations to Joe Thornton, becomes just the 14th player ever, Jumbo Joe, to get to 1,500 points. Just incredible. I mean, he's going to waltz into the Hall of Fame, which is just an amazing career that he's had. I mean, you know, he spent the time in Boston, but people forget, you know, the high draft pick and all that, and then ends up going to San Jose and establishing himself as one of just great players. And the unfortunate thing, and we'll see what he decides to do after this season, but probably be looked upon as one of the greatest players in the history of this sport without a cup.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. I mean, got so close against Pittsburgh and, you know, that year in 2016, but just couldn't get it done. And, you know, I have to say, just on a personal level, Joe Thornton is one of my absolute favorite players to interview. I've interviewed him several times, and when I did the World Cup for ESPN, he played for Team Canada, and I talked to him a lot, and he has that great huge beard, and I'll never forget him getting off the bus to come do an interview with me, and he had been eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on the way, and he said to me, "Leah, are there any crumbs in my beard?" And I'm like, I am not messing with this thing, because it is such a mess itself. But he's always so much fun. He's one of the most prolific passers in the game, and you're right, he's going to waltz into that you know, that Hockey Hall of Fame. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't blame him, Don, I don't know how you feel, if at the trade deadline, if San Jose decides, listen, it's not for us, we've got to start making some changes around here, they have an older core that they do have to start moving on from, you know, I would totally understand if Jumbo decided, you know what, I'll waive my clause and away I go, and I want to try to make a run at this, because I'm telling you, there's not a single dressing room out there and on the ice that he wouldn't be wanted for. I think he would be one of the biggest guys that anybody would want, because he still has game in him, and he's just so good in that room.
Yeah, the list of the 13 guys that are ahead of them, the only one not to win a cup is Marcel Dion. Otherwise, everybody else ahead of him on that list has multiple Stanley Cups, so it would be kind of odd if he didn't get it. So maybe at the deadline he could end up someplace where he can finally win that elusive cup. I don't think he needs it. We both agree he's a Hall of Famer, but I guess it would kind of stick out. Great career. And only the one Stanley Cup final appearance when they lost to Pittsburgh. And, you know, him and Patrick Marleau, right? You look at those two as two of the great Hall of Fame players that just have not been able to nail down that cup. Capitals with a 4-2 win over the Los Angeles Kings. We've discussed this before, but Ovechkin, his 11th 40-goal season. He gets the hat trick to win the game for the Washington Capitals. 698 goals. So now anytime he plays, he could reach 700. And I'm getting more and more convinced that a guy that's not going to turn 35 until September, that if he stays healthy, he's going to catch Gretzky. Am I nuts?
No, he's going to do it. There's not a doubt in my mind. You know, it all depends. Like you said, he's got to play, right? But we're talking about a guy who, you know, 11 out of his 15 seasons has hit the 40-goal mark. It's not out of reach by any means, just, you know, just by basic math. You know, if he does another, you know, 5 40-goal seasons, which is totally doable for him, even if he has a bit of drop-off, he's going to catch him. I mean, Gretzky's at 894. You know, so you just talked about Marcel Dion. He's at 731. You know, I think by next season we're going to see him easily behind Jaromir Jagr, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Depending on what he does this year, he could even pass Jagr next year. And then he's only got Howe at 801 and Gretzky at 894 above him. This is totally in his reach. I have to say this about Alexander Ovechkin. I will never see another player like him in my lifetime. Sometimes, honestly, Don, I don't think he gets enough credit for how good he is. You know, there's always so much talk about the Crosbys of the world and the Gretzkys. And, you know, Alexander Ovechkin, to me, the way he shoots the puck, the way he scores goals, his consistent nature, he's a strong man. He's strong on the ice. He changed his game in order to win a cup, in order to fit more into the way his team plays. There's no participant who's more passionate when it comes to playing on the world stage and representing his country as well. I just think he is a phenomenal player, and he's unlike anybody we've ever seen, and I do believe he's the greatest goal scorer of our generation.
Yeah, he's incredible, and just thinking about it off the top of my head, when you think of sports cities that have four teams, having the hockey player be by far the best player. I mean, there's no Redskin, Wizard, or National Senator that can compare to this guy as a Capital.
Absolutely. I agree with you. He is, you know, the great eight for the reason. He is the superstar in Washington. And you're right. Like, you know, I think about my time in Boston. I mean, it's all about Brady, right? So you usually don't have the hockey team guy being the superstar when it comes to the big four in a city.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it. You start looking back, you know, like Los Angeles, you probably would give it to, you know, one of the Lakers for sure, the great players that they had, Kobe, Magic, you know, now LeBron with the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, Detroit, I guess maybe what you talk about Gordie Howe, that probably would be the only other city I can think of where the hockey player would be the best. But it's so scary, right? I mean, he's not even 35 years old yet. And his game, to me, Leah, isn't predicated as much on speed as just being situational. He can play, I think, into his 40s, just camping out there on the wing on the power play and just, you know, blasting a one-timer and getting goals that way.
It's his shot. I mean, and that's what I mean about being the most prolific goal scorer of our generation. I mean, just take everything else away. His shot is, like, I can't even, when I'm watching him and I see how quick that puck comes off his stick, and I get to watch Patrick Laine a ton here in Winnipeg, and he's got a phenomenal shot as well, and how quickly he gets that puck in the back of the net. But Ovechkin's on a completely different level. There's no one like him. There is no one like him. And I truly believe he's going to be playing till he's 40. And I do think he's going to catch Gretzky. And that's just the bottom line, because he's just that good.
All right, you want to do some tweets here?
Let's do it.
All right, this one is a slam dunk to me, but we'll get your thoughts on it. Forever TH asks, fantasy 3-on-3 in their primes. What team wins best of seven series? Gretzky, Mario, Orr with Waugh in goal, or Crosby, Ovechkin, Lidstrom with Brodeur in goal? I think I go with the Gretzky team.
You would, eh?
What would you do?
I would go with the Crosby, Ovechkin, Lindstrom, and Brodeur.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, like, listen, these are, as they mentioned, like, this is like a fantasy three-on-three. Like, can you imagine? I just feel that I think that Crosby, Ovechkin, and Lindstrom, like, I could see them work. But, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's so hard. So I hate comparisons, to tell you the truth, because especially when you bring up somebody like Orr, he was brilliant in his day. But it's hard to compare him to now, right? It's very hard to do that. So I don't know if he'd be, you know, be able to, if Crosby would rub him out. Like, I just don't know. So, I just think about that.
But I kind of look at this. I look at this way. Gretzky and Mario, we saw them at the end of their careers play together, you know, in the Canada Cup and that. So you know that they would work well together. Orr is, I think, such a better offensive player than Lindstrom would be. Lindstrom was a great two-way defenseman, and he got his points, but he didn't get points the way Orr got them. And then I don't see Wah losing to Brodeur. I mean, they did meet each other in the Stanley Cup Final in 2001, but I give the slight edge in goal to Wah. I give the slight edge on defense to Orr, and you make a case with Crosby, Ovechkin versus Gretzky, Mario, but I probably would go with Gretz and Mario over Crosby and Ovechkin.
But this is the way I'm looking at it, John. We're talking about three-on-three, right? So, yes, Orr is more offensively gifted, but in three-on-three, it is about positioning, too. And when I think of Lindstrom, I think about he is going to be able to put himself on the ice and the vision that he had to see where he needs to be more on the defensive side of it. And I think about Crosby, Ovechkin, and, you know, and three-on-three is all about transition and speed. And, you know, so I'm thinking more of it not by the players being a better player than the other ones, but more about how the format of three-on-three goes and how these players would fit into it.
All right, Tom asks you specifically, Leah, what's the Canadian college hockey scene like? While most players seem to go to junior or come to the United States for college, do any players from Canadian universities before turning pro? Also, I asked Don and EJ this Monday, but what would your goal song be? So I guess we'll start with the Canadian hockey situation.
So, first of all, unfortunately, our college hockey, our college sports in general, can't even hold a candle to what goes on in the U.S. The difference being, though, is our players do not get funded. They do not receive full rides. There's different rules up here in university hockey. So, while it's a great opportunity, it's not the opportunity that you can get in the United States. So it really can't compare to it. And I've covered both. I've covered Canadian college hockey and this what we call CIS. And I've also covered U.S. hockey. And there's not even a candle to be held to it. As for my goal song, I have no idea. That is a great question. And I would like to think about this, if I may, over the next week and get back to you next Wednesday, if that's all right. Because I want it to be good. I want it to make sense. So I'd like to put some thought into that because I enjoy that question. Did you have one?
I had Freedom by Rage Against the Machine. EJ went with 10th Avenue Freeze Out, I think was his, because he's a big Bruce Springsteen fan.
Okay.
So, we'll make sure that we hear back from Tom. Make sure you tweet next Wednesday so we can remind Leah. So you got a week to think about it. So
I just wrote it down on a sticky note that I've got to think of like all the time, so I'm ready to go.
Chris is our resident Flyer fan. He said, hey, Don and Leah, in the Flyers' last 12 games, Giroux's got no goals and 5 assists, but the team is 7-3-2. Should I be encouraged the team isn't dependent on him as in the past, or should I be concerned over the lack of production with the playoffs 2 months away?
You know, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that they're not relying on him to produce all their goal scoring. I always think it's great when you can spread it around. And for me, the brilliance of Giroux isn't necessarily always in his offense. It's in the faceoff circle. He is one of the most underrated players when it comes to how good he is there, how good he is 5-on-5 defensively. His game means so much more than just putting the puck in the net to me. So I wouldn't be discouraged with him not filling the net, because if they're getting it from somewhere else, then when he does go, it's just a bonus.
All right, this is a very interesting one from Shiny Wizards Kevin. If Ilya Kovalchuk can put together two or more solid seasons and help a team, either with Montreal or otherwise, win a Stanley Cup, what do you think his legacy in the NHL will be? I'll add to that, Leah, could you see him as a Hall of Famer?
I don't see him as a Hall of Famer. I don't, you know, I think too, what you have to understand about me, even when you threw out Patrick Marleau, I don't see him as a Hall of Famer. I feel that we automatically think people should go into the Hall of Fame for certain reasons, and I hold that hall very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. I have a grandfather in it, and when I go there, I think it's the most sacred ground. And, you know, I don't base it on cuts when I'm thinking about Hall of Fame. And, you know, I don't even think Kovalchuk comes close to being in the Hall of Fame, quite frankly. And I think the fact that he also left, you know, diminished that, you know, his ability to really be that NHL consistent player, because when he returned, it's been a bit of a mess. Doing well now, in a good place for him right now, producing, but producing on a not very good team. Hall of Famers, to me, are your standouts. Right. Every single night, for generations, for a decade, you know, not generations, but a decade. And, you know, the Sidney Crosbys of the world, that's a Hall of Famer. The Alexander Ovechkins of the world, that's a Hall of Famer. The Joe Thorntons, like we talked about. I don't even think Kovalchuk comes close there.
Well, you do have a higher standard than it looks like the Hall does, because I do think Patrick Marleau is going to end up in the Hall of Fame. So when you realize who does get in, right now, I agree with you. Ilya Kovalchuk's not a Hall of Famer. But to the tweeter's question, if he plays another few years, wins a Stanley Cup, he right now stands with 441 goals. So if he ends up having two or three more productive seasons, he could end up with 500 goals and over 1,000 points. He sits at 869 right now. Would have a cup on his resume, a Stanley Cup final on his resume. You could make the conversation. As far as legacy, I think Ilya Kovalchuk's legacy, to me, probably will not go that unchanged as somebody that I wanted more from. I think the expectations were high in Atlanta. The excuse was made, the Thrashers aren't very good. Went to the Devils. That ended up not really living up to expectations. He had great seasons in the KHL, which is also, remember, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame, so those stats could end up counting for him. But from an NHL standpoint, he leaves me wanting. And I can't imagine over the next 2-3 years, even if they turn out to be great seasons, my opinion would change in that way.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That's exactly it. You hit the nail right there. You were always wanting more from him. It seemed like he could be better than what he was giving on the ice. And then he went away. And besides the season when he went to the Cup Final against LA with New Jersey, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And you know what, when I think about the Hall of Fame, I know some people on the selection committee, you know, Mark Chipman's there, Cassie Campbell-Pascoe is there, and I've had, you know, it was their first year on the selection committee, and I was asking them, like, how does it work? And they just talked about how hard of a process it is, because, you know, everybody has different opinions on a player, but when it comes down to it, you do have to look at the standard and what is the standard that has been prior to someone. You know, but, and, you know, and Kovalchuk didn't change the game anyway. It's not like a Lindros where he came in and revolutionized what a power forward was and was, you know, epic at it and truly changed his position. You know, there's some players that come in maybe that don't have the stats, but they change the way the game's even played. So do they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame for that, for changing the game and building the game? So there's all sorts of different standards.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Don. He completely leaves me wanting more. And I don't think, even if he won a cup, he's going to win a cup on a team where he's producing on a third or fourth line. He's never going to be a top six guy on a team that's a cup winner. So I don't think it changes.
And I do think the Canadians are in a position. He does have 10 points in 13 games. He had the shootout winner last night in New Jersey. I think the Canadians can get something for him, which would be pretty nice for them. I'm not saying anything big, but I do think he will get traded. And so there's a chance he could end up on a team that could win a Stanley Cup. But let's not forget, too, this is a guy that come playoff time is going to turn 37. So really, I think it's unrealistic to think he can have a couple of more productive seasons. Mm-hmm. He might be able to compile some numbers, but Ilya Kovalchuk doesn't look to me like a guy who's going to be all that productive at age 38, 39 years old. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, sometime over the next year he's probably gone again and then retires. So I don't think, I agree with you, I don't think the numbers will ever get to where he'd go to the Hall of Fame unless he just all of a sudden finds like a Kovalev type of a fifth gear that nobody thought he had and kind of can compile his way to some impressive stats. But I don't think that's going to happen. So this is fun to have you back, by the way, and I appreciate that.
Well,
and hopefully
I missed last week.
You don't forget about the question, so you got it on your Post-it note.
I got it on my sticky note. I got it on my sticky note. And I do want to say before we go, Dom, I'm just reading the tweets right now, and there's Aaron Kaufman. Happy birthday, Aaron. He asked for he had a Kovalchuk question as well, and he asked about a shout-out from his favorite podcast. So there we go, from Don and myself.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
There it is. Yeah.
Well, see, that's why you're so great. You know, let's squeeze in one more, okay, since we're all in this great mood. Troy says, when it's all said and done, do you think that Crosby and Ovechkin will be remembered as being the Magic and Bird of the NHL?
Yeah, I think Troy, I'm reading that tweet right now. I think, you know what, Troy's got a good comparison right there, because I could definitely see that. They truly are. They're different players, which is what you love about them, but they both have their own greatness about them. And I think that's exactly like Magic and Bird.
Unfortunately, they can't play each other in the final, at least not right now, as long as they stay in Pittsburgh and Washington. But again, it's going to go right down to the wire, winning the division again, Pittsburgh and Washington competing to see who could be the top seed possibly in the Eastern Conference. So it's always fun. And even though they were drafted in different years, they came in at the same time because of the lockout. So they've always been attached at the hip. Leah, great job as usual. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good, Don. Have a good one.
All right. That's Leah Hextall. Does a great job every week. And we had 2 weeks worth to do because she was out last week. So it's so great to have her back in the fold. Just a couple of games in the NHL tonight. We've got a 7:30 start of the Garden Rangers and the Maple Leafs. I'll be there doing the pre and post. Then at 8 o'clock, the Bruins and the Blackhawks from Chicago. So four of the six original six will be in action tonight. And then we'll get back to a fuller slate of games on Thursday. All right, here's the deal for Friday. Usually we do a show on Friday. We'll not be able to do it this week because I'll be traveling up to Mohegan Sun to do a remote with the Michael Kay Show. So unless something happens of significance, we'll be back with you again on Monday. We'll get EJ. We'll wrap up the weekend and all that. So I do appreciate you listening, but Friday is just not going to happen. So we did an extra long one today with Leah. You want to get in touch with me between now and next Monday, always the best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. So enjoy the weekend, everybody. Back with you again on Monday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael Kay Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.